Hello there and welcome to Sunday Night Talk on ABC Radio right across Australia. John Cleary with you from now until midnight, where it's your turn to join me and my guests for just that, a little Sunday night. Actually, the program is going to be a tad shorter, 11 o'clock. We're taking you to the cricket in the West Indies. Great time, the cricket in the West Indies this time. I guess I'll be there through the night with a lot of you. But for now, my guest this evening, an Australian who has been instrumental in turning a church of some 6.4 million people on its head, theologically speaking, that is. Until the death of Azaria Chamberlain in August 1980, few Australians had heard of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And if they had, it was usually in association with conservative, clean-cut, healthy, mum, dad and apple pie American Christianity. And perhaps that they'd some connection with the giant Sanitarium Health Food Company, purveyors of Weet-Bix and Marmite. Some may also have known that Seventh-day Adventists run large hospitals, are teetotalers and vegetarians, and had the unusual Christian practice of going to church on Saturdays. Well, the controversy which surrounded the Seventh-day Adventists during the Chamberlain affair hit newspapers worldwide. That, and later the film Evil Angels, starring Meryl Streep, brought from Australia all the negative publicity any church could handle. But not so, it seems, for during much of the last 20 years, a controversy, largely centred on another Australian, has been threatening to split the church worldwide and in a fashion which makes the Chamberlain tragedy a passing piece of human interest. The controversy of which I speak goes to the heart and very reason for being of Adventism. In the 1840s, it seems, the church's founding prophet, one Ellen G. White, rallied the group that became known as the Adventists following what was called the Great Disappointment of the 22nd of October 1844, the date when thousands of Protestants in the United States expected the Second Coming or Advent of Jesus to occur. When it didn't happen, White, claiming to be a messenger of God, had two visions, one stating that on the 22nd, Christ had entered the sanctuary of heaven to begin investigative judgment of the lives of all believers. That's sitting down, going through the big book of life and adding up those who had done wrong against those who had done right and seeing how the sums came out. The second vision confirmed the necessity of Saturday worship, hence Seventh-day Adventists. And so it remained for some 100 years, until recently, when both Ellen White and the meaning of her visions have come under scrutiny, even from within the church itself. In 1982, it was revealed that much of what Ellen White said and wrote during her life was not inspired by God so much as borrowed and even plagiarized from other writers. And perhaps even more substantially, an Australian Seventh-day Adventist theologian, Dr. Desmond Ford, the holder of two PhDs, and following years of patient study, concluded that the theology coming from Ellen White's teachings was not supported by and was in some places not consistent with the Bible itself. Ford was defrocked in 1980, the year the Chamberlain story broke. Well, the imbroglio stirred up by Ford and others has seen a church in search of its soul, with the emergence of liberal, evangelical and traditional sides seeking to redefine what it is to be an Adventist, and where Adventism stands in relationship to the rest of Christendom. Is it a sect forever outside, or a growing part of the wider Christian church? It's my pleasure to welcome to Sunday Night Talk this evening that Australian Dr. Desmond Ford. Des, welcome.
Thank you so much, John.
I hope my summary of the situation wasn't too inaccurate.
No, it was very accurate.
The controversy of which you're a part is still rather deep, it seems. News of your visit to Australia came from the Seventh-day Adventist College at Avondale, and yet when church officials were informed of your participation in tonight's program, they withdrew rather than appear with you. Why is that?
Perhaps because I have been an embarrassment to the church in suggesting, along with the majority of its scholars who speak to themselves rather than to administrators, who have said that there is necessity for doctrinal revision on its eschatological teachings about the judgment. And I have voiced these. My crime was that I voiced what the scholars of the church have long thought. So that's been an embarrassment to the church.
But it seems to be that not only is it an embarrassment, but there are people sufficiently sensitive about it to feel that perhaps the church is really dealing with fundamental issues here, and you can't be nice about it. You either have to withdraw or accept.
Well, not everybody in the church knows that changes are taking place in the direction that I suggested they should be made. For example, very recently, the former president of the main Adventist university in the world, Andrews University, Dr. Richard Hamill, wrote a paper calling on the church to look afresh at its teachings on the investigative judgment. I actually have the paper before me, and it's saying pretty much in essence the central thrust of what I delivered at an Adventist forum meeting which precipitated the storm in 1979. And other scholars too are doing the same. I have several things before me printed by the church where there's a great shift already begun. But it has to be admitted, John, that most Adventists who do not read a lot aren't even aware of these progressive changes.
Well, perhaps the PR department of the Adventist Church here in Sydney would catch up with a little of it. What led you to your stand? I mean, what were the fundamental things that you found? Was it something that you found through your own studies, or was it part of your cultural interaction with other churches as well?
It really began in my teens before I was an Adventist. No one can read Hebrews 9 without seeing clearly that it teaches that Christ's death, burial, resurrection, ascension was the antitype of the Jewish Day of Atonement. When the high priest went into the very presence of God, symbolized by the second apartment of the Jewish sanctuary, and the book of Hebrews clearly teaches that Christ fulfilled this in his ascension into the very presence of God. Now, the traditional teaching of Adventism had Christ in the first apartment until 1844, and then moving within the veil in the second apartment to do a work of investigative judgment. Of course, through the years, this has become less and less literal, and we have talked about two phases of ministry, but none of that's to be found in Hebrews. And the fact is, John, Adventist scholars have known it for decades. I can document it very clearly from top Adventist leaders where they say that scholars have known that the Adventist teaching on the judgment wouldn't hold water, and they've known it for most of this century.
And that's not the only problem, is it? You've come at it from the theological angle, but also
Yes. Other
people have started to look at what Ellen White said in her writings and have found that, in fact, there is some question about what she wrote and how she arrived at it.
Yes, Ellen White certainly taught the traditional view of investigative judgment. Her chapters on it in her chief book, The Great Controversy, mainly draw from two other Adventist writers, Uriah Smith and John N. Andrews. And it's not so much the way Ellen White put it as what Adventists have done with it. So many Adventists have lacked assurance of salvation. In a large Adventist church some time ago, its 800 members were asked, what were they sure that heaven would be theirs if they died that very day? And only two raised their hands out of 800. Now, it wouldn't be that way in every Adventist church, but it's tragic that it should be that way in any Adventist church. And my objection to the traditional teaching on investigative judgment is it has robbed many people of the assurance that they can have, that they are right with Christ this very moment, if they're trusting in his merits. And interestingly enough, Ellen White also believed what I have just said, that people can be assured here and now if they're trusting in the merits of Christ. So that was my main objection, actually, not just the technicalities that the New Testament says Christ ascended the very presence of God, and that our justification before Christ gives us the verdict, the last judgment now, without any attenuated judgment process beginning 150 years ago. But my objection is that many people have been robbed of the joy, the hilarity, the gladness of knowing that in Christ they have acceptance right now. They have eternal life from the moment they believe.
Yes, instead of having somebody sitting there in heaven at some point in time going through and weighing.
That's right. So even Dr. Hamill, who's a very loyal Adventist, says in his article, Reflections on the Adventist Interpretation of the Mosaic Tabernacle, he says very clearly that the passage of 150 years have shown that our time projection is off. I'm quoting him. And in this article of his, he says that the church since Glacier View has even misrepresented what happened at that historic meeting, that in its main journal, The Ministry, according to Dr. Hamill, it misrepresented the issues. And so Hamill is challenging the church now to come back and look at the Bible itself. And even in The Review, which is the official church paper, it put out an article after Glacier View on the investigative judgment, and here are some of the expressions that it uses. It seems clear, assuming, suggests that. The scriptures do not offer a detailed explanation of the work that was to begin in heaven in 1844. It's reasonable to assume the term investigative judgment is not found in the Bible. Hardly a tone of definiteness for what was considered a pillar of Adventist doctrine. So the church is certainly making progress. Immediately after Glacier View, the church published an article in its ministerial magazine for the first time in its history, granting that the expression within the veil used in the book of Hebrews means what it says, that Christ went in the very presence of the Father at his ascension. That was the first. So progress is being made, but not all Adventists know it. And it's one great thing about the Adventist church, that they are students of the Bible, and they are looking for light, and they have made considerable changes. Originally, the church was anti-Trinitarian, no longer so.
Well, Seventh-day Adventists is the topic. We're on Sunday Night Talk right around Australia. John Cleary, my guest this evening, Dr. Desmond Ford, an Australian born in Queensland, still considers himself an SDA at heart, but has provoked considerable controversy over the last few years by challenging the church's biblical views, or views on the Bible. Now, there's another element to this controversy that surrounds the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and that's a few years ago, 1982 to be exact, another pastor, Walter T. Ray of Patterson, California, in the course of doing a PhD, stumbled in his research across some long-buried writings by forgotten divines that matched huge swatches of Prophet Ellen White's books, and accusations of plagiarism began to surface. Des, what's your attitude to that? Is Ray credible in what he's saying?
Ray is acknowledged by church leaders, Adventist church leaders, to be correct in the sources that he names that Ellen White used. They would question the fact of it being plagiarism because the first American laws about plagiarism in prose didn't come in until after Ellen White had written most
of her
books.
Well, whether it's legal or not, she borrowed extensively.
She certainly did. There's no question about that, and the church does acknowledge it. However, it should also be said that she acknowledged it too. She only wrote one introduction to any of her books, and in that book she said she had used other writers but hadn't given sources because she did not want it to be thought she endorsed everything they said. So the Adventist Church admits the accuracy of Walter Ray's selection of sources that Ellen White used. For example, Adventists have pointed out that in their chief doctrinal book by Ellen White, The Great Controversy, at least 50% are the words of other writers.
50% so progress is a rather large swage, isn't it?
Yes, of course, it's a historical book, but nevertheless, all the major books of Ellen White draw very largely from other sources, and she recommended some of those sources through the church paper. I do not think she was being dishonest myself, because she very loudly proclaimed the necessity for church members to read some of the very books she was reading. That's in print in the church paper.
Then what is her status? Is she regarded as having some sort of semi-divine insights?
Traditionally, Adventists have regarded Ellen White as a prophet on a similar level to the prophets of the Bible. The modern position in this time, in the 1990s, has switched from that, rather that she had a special gift, such as mentioned in 1 Corinthians 14, a gift of prophecy, not to be placed as a parallel with that of Daniel and Isaiah, but a gift to rebuke and to counsel, and that makes her a good pastor. More and more Adventists are teaching that. For example, the latest issue of the Ministry magazine published by the church says that Ellen White should not be used as an authoritative commentator on the Bible. So here's the official journal for all its ministers, the latest edition, an article by George Knight condemning Adventists who use Ellen White as the authoritative interpreter of Scripture. Now, that's a direct reversal of the practice of Adventists for over 100 years.
It's extraordinary. I mean, what the church is saying is that perhaps, even though its founder gave them some enormous benefits, Ellen White gave them enormous benefits,
yes,
that the church has for 100 years been theologically wrong in the path it has been pursuing and needs to get back towards mainstream Christianity in some
ways. You're right. And, of course, it wasn't really Ellen White's fault. She told them, don't quote my writings as long as you live until you know what the Bible teaches. And there are over 100 quotations from Ellen White saying the Bible and the Bible only should be used for doctrine. You know, Lutherans use Luther, Wesleyans use Wesley, and Adventists can use Ellen White, but only the Bible should be used for doctrine. And that was her position too.
Hmm. Well, let me just ask a more general question. It does seem that much of what this controversy is about is rather esoteric and damaging to a church which in certain areas may have some eccentric edges, but on the whole has been seen to be one offering enormous social good to people right around the world.
Yes, and not only social good. Number one, it's as true as steel to the great evangelical verities at its heart. It has, as you've rightly said, some esoteric fringes that can tend towards cultism, particularly on its misuse of Ellen White, and also its teaching on the investigative judgment, which all its scholars pretty well agreed, the vast majority agree, is not biblical. But it does have a lot to offer. I think even its emphasis on the fourth commandment in our frenetic age, our madly driven age, where everyone's like a harassed, driven leaf tossed to and fro in the wind, I think Adventism's call to worship and to taking a day for the family and for God is a very healthy spiritual and social emphasis. And then its stress on the body as the temple of God. That's a great and important teaching. For centuries, we were led by the middle-aged theologians who taught that the soul was the only precious thing in a sack of dung, and it didn't matter what happened to the body. Well, Adventists have gone back to the biblical teaching, and more scholars are acknowledging that it is the biblical teaching, that the body's soul is precious and sacred, and we should present the body as a precious sacrifice to God, dedicated to Him. Adventism has much to offer, and it offers hope, because this world is careering towards a fate we all are fearful about, but Adventism points to the blessed hope of the return of Christ, and it is not in the business of setting dates. It gave that up. Adventists have never set them. William Miller was not a Seventh-day Adventist. Adventists have rejected date setting, but it does offer the blessed hope, and that's a good thing.
I'm talking with Dr. Desmond Ford, a Seventh-day Adventist, something of a rebel within his own camp, but still loyal to the cause, obviously, from what he is saying. You're on Sunday Night Talk. John Cleary with you, Seventh-day Adventist to the topic, and I'll give you some numbers to call. In a few moments, perhaps in about 10 minutes, you can line up and we'll take your calls, but I'll give you the number now. If you need to go away and get a pencil, do so. If you'd like to join us, if you're an Adventist, have been, would like to be, or just simply interested, here's the number. 0800 22 266. It's toll free from wherever you are in Australia, except Western Australia, where don't call because time's beaten you. 0800 22 266 to join us here on Sunday Night Talk, this Sunday night before the cricket, where we're talking Seventh-day Adventism with Dr. Desmond Ford, an Australian who has established quite a reputation within Adventist circles as somebody who's trying to nudge the church towards more mainstream biblical faith as accepted by, I guess, those groups who would associate themselves with mainstream councils of churches. Would that be the area that you're heading towards, Des? You know, the mainstream?
Certainly towards the evangelical teachings of the Reformation as expressed in modern mainline churches, yes.
How in that sense can you call yourself an Adventist then? I mean, isn't Adventism defined by Ellen White?
No. The heart of Adventism is the phrase, the everlasting gospel, found in Revelation 14:6. Adventists declare that's their charter. And the heart of Adventism should be the affirmation that the cross of Christ is the center of all true religion, and trust in his merits is the only adequate motivation to a holy and true Christian life. The best of Adventists see it that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about a couple of the things that Adventism is famous for. The emphasis on health, you've already mentioned, the Sanitarium,
yes,
Health Food Company. Now, That's an enormous investment worldwide. Does the church get a direct profit out of that? And what sort of service is, where's the theology behind that?
The theology behind it is that the traditional teaching of Christendom, that there is something mystical called the soul that can function without a body, is not a scriptural teaching. There are approximately 1,646 references to soul and spirit in the Hebrew and Greek scriptures, and in not one of those is it said that the soul or spirit can function consciously without a body. So Adventists are really up to date with where the best theologians are. If we look at the most modern encyclopedias of theology, such as Alan Richardson's, if we look at Kittle, the vast majority of them today concede that the Jewish view of the man was a body-soul unity, that the Jews knew nothing about a mystical immaterial part of man known as the soul. And scholars on Paul say he took the same position, and so did Christ, who stressed the resurrection. There's nothing in the Bible about the intermediate state except a parabolic story of Christ, which cannot really be taken literally. So the trend of modern theology supports this view that the body-soul is important, and therefore we should care for it as good stewards of health. And Adventists, by and large, live longer than non-Adventists. That is, genuine Adventists that are vegetarians or lacto-over-vegetarians.
I don't know, I could have an argument with you over this. See, my background's with the Salvation Army, and the Salvation Army are very strong on sort of teetotalism and sort of, and, you know, we could probably get into a merit of whether playing in a brass band helps you more than sort of eating your Weet-Bix every morning.
Well, possibly so. I think that's probably right. But, John, we'd agree with you about being teetotalers, you see. And we'd add tobacco in as well. And we've done that for over 100 years. We were ahead of all the royal commissions.
Okay, look, I can see there's room for a mutual admiration society here, but there's also a lot of people want to talk about this, and we're going to give you a chance in just a few moments. If you'd like to give us a ring, 008-022-266, 008-022-266. Now, Des, you're in Australia to give some lectures, but you're taking up a theme which I can see has a connection to the health aspect of SDA belief. That is,
yes, the new age, with its holistic health teachings, you know, which is a mixture of good and evil. Even a clock that's stopped tells the truth twice a day, and there are some things that are truthful in the new age teachings about health when it stresses the influence of the mind on the body. But a lot of its other things are weird, non-scientific, and sometimes anti-scientific positions. You may remember Carl Sagan wrote an article called The Fine Art of Baloney Detection in the magazine Parade, in which he berated some of these New Age teachings, and correctly so. It's a mixture of science and superstitions, fads, facts, and fancies.
But ultimately,
and so I'm speaking on it.
Ultimately, the religious quest is one where you're stepping outside a scientific view of the world, aren't you?
Yes, but not necessarily anti-scientific, rather beyond, trans-scientific. There's a difference between the two. True Christianity shouldn't be anti-scientific, though it goes beyond science.
So you would say that those things where science can demonstrate that it has facts on its side through the rational method,
yes,
the scientific
method,
we should accept.
God's laws are written in nature.
How do you line up with things like creationism then?
Well, I'm not altogether in favour of many things that modern creationist groups have said. Those that have contended for a short age earth have not a leg to stand on, either biblically or scientifically. So I'm not at all in favour of that. But I'm very much in favour of the fact that the world is a planned affair. It's not an accident. It's a ship. It's not an iceberg. I agree in the stress on creation given by Adventists, though I do not agree with those extreme Adventists who want an Earth of 6,000 years old and who deny the geological column.
Yes, what about evolution as a hypothesis? Do you have a problem with that?
Well, I don't think any Adventist scientist denies microevolution. What they do deny is macroevolution because of the complete lack of transitional forms between the major phyla. So microevolution, all Adventist scientists agree with. Macroevolution, pretty well all Adventist scientists would deny.
Somebody like Stephen Jay Gould, though, would offer a view that...
punctuated equilibrium,
yes, yes.
Which is just a guess to supply the lack of transitional forms.
Sure, but wherever there have been lacks in the past, they have eventually been filled in, haven't they?
Often so. We don't want to just worship a god of the gaps.
Yes.
That is true. But nevertheless, there have been 1,000 guesses, and not all of them have been fulfilled, so we'll wait for the evidence before we're committed.
Okay, well, look, another topic. The worldwide growth of Adventism. It's one of those religions which sprang up, classified out of America in, I guess, the middle of the 19th century with groups like Christian Science, Jehovah's Witness, Mormonism. They all had an enormous, if you like, frontier spirit. They captured that frontier adventuring, pioneering spirit wedded to evangelicalism, which made them very strong missionary religions. So there was, there was a cultural similarity between them, even though their theologies were sort of widely divergent. Now, does that still hold in Adventism?
Well, the genuine Adventist is challenged to share his faith. The great drawback is so many Adventists lack assurance of salvation, they're not good missionaries. The average Adventist doesn't give one Bible study a year. Why share their uncertainties? My ministry for the last 20, 30 years has been on the gospel of righteousness by faith, that by sheer trust in the merits of Christ, one can have the verdict of the last judgment right now, and that's known as justification. We're not talking about once saved, always saved, but we're saying that while trusting in Christ alone, and thereby fleeing from sin, one can have assurance one is right with God. This is a rising stress in Adventism, even among administrators. For example, in this division, the local division recently sent a complaint to American headquarters that the Sabbath School Quarterly for the World Church has twisted the doctrine of righteousness by faith. So that's something that's very good here in the Australasian division. Its administrators are trying to give the gospel its right place. I'm pleased about that.
How fast is the church growing worldwide, you know?
Well, it's growing chiefly in the third world. Of course, that's true of the mainline churches, even to a greater degree, in some parts of the world. America, Europe, the church is not growing that much at all, keeping up with the dead hardly. Mm. But in third world countries, Adventism, along with Pentecostalism and other groups, is growing rapidly.
Pretty much in the same vein as mainline churches. Well, let's take some calls. Time to say hello to you at home and see what you'd like to have to say on Seventh-day Adventists. Tonight on Sunday Night Talk right around Australia, 0800 222 266 if you'd like to give us a call. We're talking with Dr. Des Ford.